The U.S. Senate passed a bill yesterday that would put $250 billion into scientific research, development, and technology manufacturing over the next 5 years. It would also target some of that funding to cities between the coasts. The bill passed 68-32, and it has President Biden's support. It's aimed at keeping America's innovation economy competitive with other countries. Okay, mainly with China. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said yesterday that he sees the bill as key to maintaining the country's place on the world stage.
The world is more competitive now than at any time since the end of the Second World War. If we do nothing, our days as the dominant superpower may be ending.
The bill would still have to pass the House. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the investments this bill would make? Do you want to see the U.S. government invest more into research and development of new technology? Do you think that's the right role for the federal government, or would you rather see him stay out of it? And what do you think of the idea of some of this money going to boost innovation in places, you know, that aren't the Silicon Valley or Seattle or the big research hubs on the coast? Maybe the Midwest, maybe Wisconsin. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Jonathan Gruber is the Ford Professor of Economics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and co-author of the book Jump Starting America, How Breakthrough Science Can Revive Economic Growth and the American Dream. John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
What are some of the things in this bill that jump out to you as maybe having a big impact?
Well, I think it's important, Rob, to get a little background, which we lay out in our book Jump Starting America, which is not many people know that in the mid-1960s, the U.S. government spent 2% of the entire country's GDP on public science. That's one in every $50. And that led to the entire modern technology economy, from modern medicines to satellites to digital computers. It also, the government at the same time, invested a mass amount in education. So that combination of more skilled workers with more demand for skills led to really the creation of the modern American middle class. Unfortunately, America's gone away from that commitment, and our spending on public R&D is now down to 0.6% of GDP, and we're 12th in the world, or about half the level of China. So that's one problem. The other problem is the innovation that's happening is all happening in a very limited set of places on the coast. 90% of all the jobs in the innovation sectors in the last 13 years have been created in just five cities, all on the coast. So in a situation where we're falling behind technologically and we're splitting apart. So we have both this external threat of other countries passing us on the technological frontier and the internal threat, which we see politically, of a country dividing between the haves on the coast and the have-nots throughout the country. So what this bill tries to do is really address both things. First of all, there's a major new investment in research and development. It's a complicated bill with lots of moving pieces, but if you sort of do the math, at the end of the day, there's something like $100 billion of new R&D, $100 to $150 billion of new R&D investment over 5 years in this bill, which is great. It's not enough. It still moves us only from 12th in the world to something like 8th in the world. So we need more, but it's a step in the right direction. The second thing this bill does is set up an innovative tech hub competition program where the Department of Commerce would have $10 billion to essentially run what Amazon did. Remember when Amazon set up HQ2? They ran a competition. But their competition was what we call a race to the bottom. It was to see which cities could give them the biggest tax breaks. This competition is a race to the top. It's to find 18 places in America, 18 is the number in the current bill, that can be next-generation technology hubs and to give them the resources to compete with a Seattle and a Boston. So if this works, if this bill passes and works the way I hope and expect it to, we're going to have a country that innovates more, grows faster, and grows more equally around the country.
One of the objections to this kind of idea, and it came from some of the senators who voted against it, though, again, 68 votes for, hard to pull off in the Senate. But one of the objections is, you know, the federal government isn't great at picking winners, at knowing where we need to invest money to research for the future. Better left to private businesses, to the market, and that's going to lead us to where we need to go. What do you say to that objection?
Well, basically, that's an objection we write about extensively in our book, and I'd urge people to read it. There's really two fundamental failures with relying on the private market for R&D. The first is that private companies aren't interested in the kind of basic innovation that drives economies. They're rightly I'm a capitalist. They're rightly interested in their own bottom lines. But their own bottom line means doing research that benefits them and not sharing it. So here's a simple example, Rob. Corporate scientists used to be some of the leading scientists in our nation. They'd win Nobel Prizes. You remember the Bell Labs days. Publications by corporate scientists are down 60% in the last 3 decades. And companies like IBM explicitly no longer reward their scientists for publications, which broaden the knowledge base, but only for patents, which affect only the profits of IBM. So that's the first problem, is companies aren't doing the research on things like the Human Genome Project, okay, on genetic mapping, which benefit all of us. The second problem is that there's what they call the valley of death, which is that new companies can't get the capital to get started. Now, you might think that's funny because everybody knows about the famous U.S. venture capital sector and how good they've been at, you know, financing companies like Apple. But they're good at companies that produce software. They're not very good at companies that produce hardware, where they take large investments, take a long time to pay off. That really needs public commitments. And those are the kind of commitments that are made in this bill.
Talking to Jonathan Gruber from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, co-author of the book Jumpstarting America, How Breakthrough Science Can Revive Economic Growth and the American Dream, looking at this bill just passed the Senate. With enough votes to pass it, including Republicans with the Democratic majority, that would make new investments in research and development, technology here in the United States, and try to bring some hubs away from the coast that already have a lot of this kind of stuff. You could join in with your thoughts and your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. John, let's go to part two here now. This idea, as you were mentioning earlier, of trying to create new hubs where they aren't now. Can the federal government do enough to make that happen, to grow a Silicon Valley outside of the Valley?
Well, I think Silicon Valley should not grow new Silicon Valley. I don't think anywhere in America can really compete for the kind of IT software innovation that's done in Silicon Valley. But we have lots of other technologies we need. Okay, let me ask a question. I won't wait for an answer, but if any of your listeners get this right, that'd be terrific, because I've asked this question about 3,000 people and only about 20 have gotten it right, which the question is, where is the national hub for developing computer simulation, as well as the home of the largest university in America? The answer is Orlando, Florida. Why Orlando, Florida? Because the government put a Navy base in Orlando, Florida as a political favor in the 1960s. The University of Central Florida, which at the time was a very middling university, partnered with the Navy to set up a corporate research park around computer simulation. Today, that research park, the Central Florida Research Park, employs 10,000 people, and East Orange County has added 100,000 people, over 100,000 jobs over 30 years. All off a government investment in a new technology in that city. This can happen all over the country. We document in our book 102 cities where people are well, including many in Wisconsin, where people are well educated, where there are great universities, where there are affordable housing. So we don't have to deal with the fact that basically, yes, we're the superstar cities that no one can afford to move to, because the average house price in a superstar city is 3 times the average house price in other cities. We need to create affordable new tech hubs, and that's what we suggest in the book.
Okay, if I live in Wisconsin, I might think, okay, great, you get a hub here in the state in one of these cities you're talking about, but I live in a rural area, so what? What is it going to do for me?
Well, 54% of rural Americans actually live within a metro area. We are not talking about a hub that would just literally be a city block. We're talking about a hub that would be an entire economy. If you think about the reach of a Seattle or a Boston, it reaches many, many miles outside the city, okay? And many, many miles outside of places in Wisconsin we talk about in our book, like Janesville, Benoit, and Madison, or Milwaukee, or Appleton, Green Bay, and Oshkosh. These are places where there's rural people living nearby who can benefit. Moreover, even people who are far from these cities, you have to ask yourself, are those people really going to get up and move to San Francisco for a job when they have to be so far from family, when housing's unaffordable? No. Might they move to Madison, where, yes, it may be 3 hours from their family, but at least they can go home for dinner on the weekends and housing's affordable? They might. So we think this benefits not just a small set of cities, but the entire U.S.
We're picking up our talk with Jonathan Gruber, economics professor at MIT, about the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act. It passed the U.S. Senate yesterday. Aims to put more money into research and development of high technology manufacturing, and more, and tries to bring high tech hubs off of the coast or in addition to the coast to other places, maybe here. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think of this idea? Do you want to see the federal government making more of these kind of investments? Do you think we need to do it to stay competitive? Or should the federal government stay out of these kind of things, leave it to the market? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. John, we've talked about some of the objections raised by people who don't think that the government should be doing this kind of investment in the first place. The other end is that this isn't enough. $250 billion divided by 5 years, divided by how many projects and focuses and technologies. Is this enough to make a difference, John?
Look, it is enough to make a difference. It's not enough. It shouldn't be. It's a starting point. It's not an ending point. If I had my druthers, I would be doing about on the order of 10 times as much. And that would put us back in the lead of the world. I think at an era when interest rates are basically zero, the government needs to be thinking about making investments in our future, and there's no higher return investment than research and development. So no, I don't think it's enough, but it's the largest increment to R&D spending in a long time. And importantly, if the tech hubs are successful, they can build broader community support to understand the fundamental fact about R&D that scientists do not highlight enough, which is science creates jobs. Okay, this is the thing. We want jobs. We want good jobs. The way to get good jobs is to innovate and create new products. We have to hire people to make them. And the more that happens around our country, the more there'll be broad support for investing in that science. So I think we're not done with this bill, but I think it's a powerful first step.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Eric is with us in Milwaukee. Eric, hi.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Now, what did you want to bring up, Eric?
Hey, so I work for a large social media company based in San Francisco, but work remotely in Milwaukee. And I just wanted to say that I do think that the federal government should be encouraging large tech-based companies to be expanding to non-coastal, potentially smaller cities. And then the other thing that I guess I'd like to say is that with the pandemic and the advent of more remote-based work, I think it's important for the federal government to set up, and local governments as well, to make cities and locations more appealing for remote workers, and having companies set up hubs, even if they're not large offices, I think is going to be enough to attract some remote workers who don't even work for those companies, so long as there's the name recognition.
Eric, interesting. Thanks for the call. John, what do you think of that model?
Well, I mean, I agree with the general sense. I think it's a great point. You know, our book was written before COVID, and I don't know how much the world has really changed in the long run in the sense of, gee, you could say, well, look, the tech hub's problem's going to go away because no one has to live there anymore. I don't think that's really going to happen. I think people, they may not want to live in downtown Boston, but they're not going to leave Boston. They're still going to be in Boston. And I think at the end of the day, if a place in Wisconsin or where my wife's from in Minnesota, I know there's some competition there, but I just had to mention it. If a place in one of those states wants to really compete, they're going to need to make a big investment, bigger than these cities can afford on their own, and they're going to need federal help.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to John Gruber from MIT, co-author of the book Jump Starting America, How Breakthrough Science Can Revive Economic Growth and the American Dream. Now, with this bill that passed the Senate, supporters are really talking up competition with China here. That people might think, okay, China, yeah, they've taken a lot of manufacturing from the U.S. and from around the world. We know that. Are they really taking such a lead when it comes to technological innovation, John, maybe based in part on the investments we talked about earlier?
They are. China is taking an enormous lead, and there's nowhere better to see that than the examples we refer to in the last chapter of our book, which is technologies that were invented in the U.S., perfected in the U.S., but then due to lack of government funding didn't flourish in the U.S. and now are dominant in China. Take synthetic biology. This is essentially the recreation of biological processes artificially in the lab, a critical area for future research, especially in the era of pandemics. That was a field invented here at MIT, perfected in the U.S., with funding from the National Science Foundation, but after 10 years, the National Science Foundation cut off the funding. At that point, the field dwindled in the U.S. and took off in China, to the point where the international competition in this area, which the U.S. used to dominate, we now lose annually to China. There's area after area where China has realized the way that they're going to jumpstart their role in the world economy. I mean, they've developed incredibly rapidly, right, relative to any other country in history. And they realize innovation is their way to world leadership. I don't want to say domination. This isn't about fear-mongering. It's economic leadership, and it's about jobs. It's about whether those good, high-value jobs are going to be in the U.S. or China. There is real competition there. And the way to win that competition is not with tariffs on Chinese refrigerators. That doesn't win the competition. That just hurts U.S. consumers. The way to win the competition with China is to out-invent them, and that requires investment.
We heard from Marcus in Madison, who says so much R&D is a transfer of public money into private hands, from universities to Pentagon contractors. If the public is paying for it, Marcus says, we should get paid back for it and realize the profits. And that's a concern others have raised. If public money is going into it and then a private company ends up making the money, are we kind of getting ripped off?
That's a great question. So two answers to that. One is not always. Let's take the Human Genome Project. This was a project where the National Institutes of Health put in $3 billion over a 13-year period to map the human genome. Directly because of this investment, today we have a genomic sector in America that employs directly or indirectly 270,000 people and pays $6 billion per year in taxes. So that's a 200% return every single year. So that's a case where we weren't getting ripped off or making money. On the other hand, there are lots of cases where that's not true, where we spend a lot of money in NIH to do basic science, and pharmaceutical companies run with that, develop a drug, and pay no taxes. That's why we need corporate tax reform as well. And that's why, indeed, Biden's proposal, which included R&D, would have funded it with a corporate tax increase. I think that's totally appropriate. In many ways, you can sort of think of we've shifted R&D from corporations used to do it, like Bell Labs, to now the government has to do it, which is fine, but then corporations need to pay their share. So I think the answer is not to try to figure out some way for the government to try to take the patent back, which I think is very dangerous, but basically corporations to pay their fair share in taxes and for us to get the return that way.
Do we forget the history of American investment in research and development and what we've gotten out of it? I guess I'm thinking mainly of the internet. If you can talk about it, that as an example of something that started in many ways from government projects.
Well, Rob, everything in science fundamentally started with government funding. I mean, literally every drug that was invented over the last 15 years is based in some way or form on NIH-sponsored research. The internet was based on basically the Department of Defense wanted to set up a network to communicate around the country, and they invested in the R&D to do so. A great example in our book was a company that basically was hired by the military to develop a new technology to find mines, to find landmines and defuse them. It realized this technology had broader uses, and the Roomba was born. Today, iRobot makes most of their money not from defense contracts, but from the Roomba, and they employ 1,000 people in America making Roombas. Okay, they're basically technology after technology, from the GPS that helps you find your way home, to the drugs that keep you alive, to the airplanes that fly you places, to the computer you use at your desk. It all came fundamentally from public R&D in partnership with the private sector. Okay, I'm not a socialist. I'm not suggesting government takeover. This is all about government partnering with the private sector, not displacing the private sector. And then, of course, it does raise the issue the previous person raised about the fact that how does the government get the return, and that is a challenge. So it's really about partnering with the private sector, but then taxing the private sector to make sure the government shares in the benefits of that partnership.
In just our last minute, John, we've mostly focused on this bill that passed the Senate, which still have to go through the House. The president says he supports it. What would be the best next step, assuming this thing went through? What would be the next priority you'd want to focus on?
Well, there's a lot of implement. I worked very carefully on the Affordable Care Act, and We've seen the problems in rolling that out that we saw. There's a lot of details once you pass a bill and actually implementing it. For example, this tech hub competition, we want to make sure it's a real competition, not just a political boondoggle. That involves careful work by the Commerce Department to set up the competition. We want to make sure these new forms of R&D are spent appropriately. So there's a lot of work that has to go into actually making the money spent appropriately. But I think the next steps would be to just keep going, to set these up, and then to really start to build the drum for an increasing trajectory. China has committed to increasing the share of their GDP they spend in R&D year over year. We need to keep up with that. So this needs to be the beginning of the conversation, not the end.
This will be the end of our conversation, though, John. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
You bet. My pleasure.
That's Jonathan Gruber, professor of economics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, co-author of the book Jump Starting America. He talked with us about what the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act would mean for technology research and manufacturing in the country. That bill passed the U.S. Senate, waiting for action now in the House.